Has someone addressed you with unfriendly words or threatened you? Could you not give charity to one who asks, or could you not keep your promise to someone? Purport. A Kshatriya or Vishnam is sometimes visited by persons who are in need of money. When they are asked for a donation, it is the duty of the possessor of wealth to give in charity in consideration of the person, place and time. If a Kshatriya, a rich man, fails to comply with this obligation, he must be very sorry for this discrepancy. Similarly, one should not fail to keep his promise to give in charity. These discrepancies are sometimes causes of despondency, and thus failing, a person becomes subjected to criticism, which might also be the cause of Arjuna's plight. So Arjuna is not in regular consciousness. Yudhisthira is trying to understand what is the cause of his despondency. This is Vaishnava. He sees someone else in distress. He wants to help them. He wants to know what the difficulty is. A Vaishnava is not callous. Vaishnava is known as one who is disturbed by the dukkha dukkhi. One who is disturbed to see the unhappiness of others. The materialist is just the opposite. He's very happy to see others miserable, because then he can be one up and say, "Oh, I'm better off than you." One of my godbrothers, he told me about his parents in New York City. They had a suburban home on Long Island. They were sitting in the backyard sipping martinis. And the wife said to the husband, "I wonder what the poor people are doing today." So this is the material mentality. If I can have a better car than you, or, you know, a more attractive girlfriend, you know, they think, "Oh, yes, I'm really enjoying material consciousness." So such one-upmanship doesn't bring any real satisfaction to the self. Actually, that one-upmanship tendency is the cause of all of our anxieties. We want to be one up on Krishna, that's why we're here. Actually, in the spiritual world, everyone is meant to be subordinate to Krishna. They are subordinate to Krishna. But if one wants to be one up on Krishna, he's here. So we have to learn this wonderful Buddha Maharaj. He is our guru. He is a great saintly devotee. Even though he is king, he is a very great saintly devotee. How much he is concerned that Arjuna is in anxiety, to find out the cause of that anxiety. This is the mood of serving Vaishnavas. Some say, "Well, I don't need to serve any Vaishnava. I just devoted to Krishna." Who cares about the Vaishnava? I just need to devote to Krishna. And what does Krishna say in the Adi Purana about such a mentality? He says, "Yena bhakta jana partha, name bhakta shtate jana, mad bhaktanam ti ye bhaktas, teme bhakta tamavata." My dear son of Prita, the one who is my devotee, na me bhaktas. That's pretty simple Sanskrit. Na me bhaktas, he's not my devotee. The one who is my devotee, he is not my devotee, but the devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee. So here we see Yudhisthira, he's devotee, even though Arjuna is younger brother. Arjuna is meant to be devoted to the older brother. We see the older brother, he is still in a mood of service dedicated to the younger brother. This is the great strength of the Pandavas. There was no envy, there was no rivalry, there was no jealousy. They were all devoted to each other according to their respective positions. Completely devoted to each other. So, what is the lesson to me of Dharag? Bhagavatam is not some storybook, some interesting stories for entertainment. Of course, it's very entertaining reading, you know, but it's meant to teach a lesson. We are meant to learn from Srimad Bhagavatam how to develop the quality of these great personalities that we are studying. Mahajana yena gata kipantha. One must follow these great personalities. One must develop the qualities of these great personalities. That is Krishna Dhamma's movement. Not simply being a member of some organization. Krishna Dhamma's movement means to develop the qualities of these great Mahajanas. That's what it actually means to be a member of Krishna Dhamma's movement. So, the more we become devotee and devotee, then Krishna recognizes, oh yes, you are my devotee. Actually, we want that recognition. We want Krishna to recognize this as a devotee. We want Krishna to be pleased, not that he doesn't notice us. We want Krishna to notice. Be pleased with our service. That desire we have. And Krishna may see how I am serving very, very nicely. There's even that prayer in the Sri Upanishad. Devotee is praying to the Lord, please remember all that I have done for you. So we want to be recognized. So we can be pleased with this. We want that relationship with Krishna. That is devotee. And the impersonals, they have no desire for any kind of relationship. They want to kill all relationships. Devotees, we want loving relationship with Krishna. We want loving relationship with Guru. We want loving relationship with Vaishnavas. And the more those loving relationships become matured, developed, tasteful, full of sweetness, full of vigor, full of light, full of deep compassion. That is the advancement of our Krishna consciousness. Actually, it is that loving relationship is what allowed this movement to begin. Prabhupada gave so much love and affection to the devotees, and they wanted to reciprocate. They didn't know anything about the philosophy, really. One professor, he came to visit the center, 26 Second Avenue, a religion professor. He could see the devotees didn't really know what. They had no deep understanding of Vaishnava culture, Vaishnava philosophy. But one thing they had, they were very dedicated to Swamiji. Very dedicated. Prabhupada gave so much love to the devotees, and they wanted to reciprocate. And by that reciprocation, that loving reciprocation of Srila Prabhupada, the more they engage in that loving reciprocation of Srila Prabhupada, the more their hearts became purified, and gradually, they understood more and more about the science of Krishna consciousness. So that same process is going on now. And you cannot realize beyond the level of love that you have achieved for Guru, Krishna, and Vaishnavas. We can only, not by jnana,
not by jnana yukta, but to the extent that we have actually entered into a loving relationship with our Guru Maharaj, with the Vaishnavas, with Srila Prabhupada, you see. The more that genuine loving feeling, that loving attitude, which is manifested in the form of service, the more that becomes manifest, that's how we realize Krishna. Because you can't bypass it. You cannot be an impersonalist and realize Krishna. It's not possible. You cannot do that. Not possible. Only by being a personalist, which means a loving, serving person. That service attitude, the more the service attitude becomes manifest, the Guru, Krishna, and Vaishnava, that will bring about the realization of Krishna. That will bring one more and more into contact with Krishna. You see, Krishna is actually present everywhere. There's nowhere Krishna is not. But we don't feel in touch with Krishna due to the impersonal nature. We don't feel that in that contact with Krishna. But the more we can develop that loving, serving mood, then we will feel how Krishna is there. There was one very nice advice Prabhupada gave to one of his spiritual daughters, Balavi Devi, about how to chant japa. He said, when chanting japa, feel the presence of Krishna. This was the first advice. When you chant japa, feel the presence of Krishna. And then he said, you can't do that, then fix your mind on the sound vibration of Krishna's name. I thought that was very significant because then, you know, I've been around ISKCON for about 42 years and we've always heard, you know, fiction, mind on the name of Babu, you know, the standard instruction. But this is quite different. This is very different. Feel the presence of Krishna. I'm like, wow, that's amazing. The second best is fiction mind. But just imagine, feel the presence of Krishna. What does that mean? Well, the first thing is He is present. Problem, we don't feel His presence. Because we chant mechanically, well, like, get it done, put the piece down, it's all done, thank God. Now I can enjoy it. Now I can space out. But if we actually approach the japa, that now I've been blessed with this opportunity to associate with Krishna, personally associate with Krishna. Oh, how fortunate I am. I had this opportunity to personally associate with Krishna, the supreme beautiful, the supreme powerful, the supreme renounced, the supreme knowledgeable, the supreme wealthy, the supreme famous personality. There's a devotee of playing on his flute. Whose blooming eyes are like lotus petals. Whose head is decked in peacock's feathers. His figure of beauty is tinged with the hue of blue clouds, and his unique loveliness is charming millions of cupids. I can actually associate with that person, the first progenitor, zealing all desire, tending the cows and the boats filled with spiritual gems, served with great reverence and affection by hundreds and thousands of Lakshmis and gopis. I can associate with that person. He's an undifferentiated entity. There is no distinction between potency and the possessor thereof. In his work of creation of millions of worlds, his potency remains inseparable. All the universes exist in him, and he is present in his fullness in each and every one of the atoms that are scattered throughout those universes at one and the same time. actually associate with that person. You see, it's amazing. This transcendental form is full of truth, bliss, substantiality, and therefore emanates the most dazzling splendor. Each and every one of that limb, all those limbs, possesses the full-fledged functions of all the organs, and eternally sees, maintains, and manifests the infinite universes, both spiritual and mundane. I mean, where is there any person like this anyway? The demigods don't have those qualities. No superstar of this world. There's nobody like Krishna. He's absolutely one without a second. His form is not subject to decay. He has no beginning. He is beginning in the eternal Purusha. Yet he is he's manifesting the beauty of blooming youth. That amazing person that is worshipped by all the demigods. That person can become our intimate personal associate if we're willing to receive him with love. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Prabhupada has made him available. Here is Krishna. Take him. Is your eternal Lord? Take him. So it's up to us. Do I want Krishna? Do I want
Maya?
See, we have that's also Krishna's external nature. See, we're all taking Krishna. Well, which way do you want him? You want his external bhakti or his superior internal bhakti? We have that choice. We have to intelligently decide. Where do I get a better deal? From the material energy or the spiritual energy? From the material energy, what do I get? Birth, death, old age, disease. From the spiritual energy, what do I get? Eternality, knowledge, and bliss. I can't imagine that we're so foolish. We keep going to temporality, ignorance, and misery. We're so stupid. We're so dull. We keep going for that again and again. Like a worm detached to the stool. That's our embarrassing position. Our very, very embarrassing position we're in right now. So we gotta get trained up. We have to get fixed up in Krishna consciousness. A wonderful system given by Srila Prabhupada. How we can gradually get elevated. First thing is preliminary faith, Shraddha. The next thing is you associate with devotee, Sadhu Sangha. The next thing is Bhajana Kriya. You follow the principles of Krishna Bhakti given by Rupa Goswami. Get initiated, follow all the procedures, and it's called Bhajana Kriya. And then, by following the order of Guru, very carefully, very sincerely, strictly chanting at least 16 rounds every day without fail, and giving them illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication again, and obeying the orders of your Guru Maharaj. By doing this, then the anarthas gradually are cleansed away. The lust, the anger, the greed, the madness, the illusion, the envy, they're gradually cleansed away. And as they become cleansed more and more away, gradually one enters into a wonderful, wonderful stage called nishcha, or firm faith, unwavering faith, and one cannot be budged an inch from his conviction that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. See, as long as we're tinged by lust, by anger, by greed, by madness and illusion, we are subject to doubts. Our faith is still subjected to doubt. Because we're still under the spell of material desires. But as these anarthas are gradually purified away by this process,
then one's faith becomes absolutely firm, unconditional. And we achieve that state mentioned in the Shvita Shvatala Upanishad 6:23. Only unto those souls who have unflinching faith in the words of Sri Guru and Krishna are all the imports of Vedic knowledge revealed. Actually, just by that faith, one can fully realize the Vedic wisdom. If one has unflinching faith in the words of the Guru and Krishna, we've seen this practically in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. There was one Brahmana in Ramana. This Brahmana, he couldn't read, he was totally illiterate. But his spiritual master ordered him, "Every day, my dear disciple, you must read 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita." So what can he do? He didn't have a BBC edition, but they had, you know, hand copied Bhagavad Gita. So he's looking every day, he's looking very diligently, looking up in all the letters, reading all the shlokas. He can't understand a word of it, but he's literally looking at it. And everybody's making fun of him. "Oh, this literate Brahman reading Bhagavad Gita. Ha 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 ha." You see? Making so many jokes about it. But he didn't care. "My spiritual master ordered me that I must do." So Lord Chaitanya, he came to that temple. He heard all this talk about the literate Brahmana reading the Gita. So he went to approached him. He said, "Brahmana, I heard you reading Bhagavad Gita, but you're literate. Is that true?" Well, the Brahmana, Prabhupada said, could understand this person is not coming. When he saw Lord Chaitanya, he thought he could understand this person is not coming to criticize me. So he said, "Yes, what can I do? My spiritual master ordered me every day I must read 18 chapters." So I'm sitting here looking over the manuscript. The Lord Chaitanya said, "The Brahman, I see you're not only reading Bhagavad Gita, you're crying also. How is it you're crying?" He said, "Well, they made a nice illustration here among us. And I can see that Krishna, he is so kind. He's acting as a charioteer of his own devotee, Arjuna. When I think how kind is Krishna, I cry." So Lord Chaitanya gave him a big hug. He said, "Brahmana, you are the real scholar of Bhagavad Gita." So even though he was illiterate, actually he fully realized the import of the Vedic religion. Why? Because he had an unflinching faith in the order of his spiritual master. Unflinching. And therefore he could enter into the inner meaning of the scriptures. So, simply become a big, big scholar. You see, that does not follow by him. He becomes spiritually liberal. Spiritual perfection comes by that unflinching faith in the words of Guru and Krishna. That is how one becomes spiritually perfect. So therefore we must try to have that faith. So whatever Prabhupada said, that is the truth. Some people say that Prabhupada was conditioned. A conditioned soul, he gave some very nice ideas, but actually his words were not as good as Shastra. This is very offensive. He said, "It's all about the words are not as good as Shastra." The Prabhupada is authoritative when he quotes Shastra, but when he gives his opinion, he is not. It's very, very offensive. Srila Prabhupada, the pure Vaishnava, he was sent by Krishna from the spiritual world to this material world to give us these books. Every word of these books is Shastra.
very purport. It's revealed by Krishna with the Maharaj.
So we must have full faith in Srila Prabhupada that he has not made some mistake in his instructions and try to adjust them. Well, you know, they say, well, in the world, you know, this is now the current trend and the way people see things. So to make our movement acceptable, we have to change the teachings so the people will accept them. But that's a completely rubbish idea. We have to change the world, not that we adjust Prabhupada's teaching to suit the world. We have to change the world to suit Prabhupada's teaching. That is our Krishna Dharma, isn't it? We are meant to change the whole world, to bring the world in line with Prabhupada's teachings. That is our mission. To bring a spiritual revolution in this planet. That is our mission. So I can ask now if there's any questions. Looks like there's no question. So there's no question, we can let everybody out early today. Yeah.
Prabhu at the Japa retreat in Varshana recently, Gurijana Prabhu and Sachinandana Maharaj were the facilitators of the retreat, and they were coaching us to coat our japa with our desire to serve. Can you make any relationship between this instruction to coat our prayers with a desire to serve Krishna and your mention of Prabhupada's writing to Balani to feel Krishna's presence?
Can you summon?
Yes, he said they had a retreat with Sachidananda Swami and Prabhu in Prashana. There they said when you chant your japa, you have to think about how you can serve. And can you correlate with this what Prabhupada said and to Vallabhi?
By feeling Krishna's presence. Actually, Prabhupada gave various instructions about chanting japa. He also said that you should chant like a child crying for the mother. So, you may say, well, how do all these things fit together? Which one should I do? Actually, they're all good. All of these approaches to japa, they're all valid, they're all bona fide, they all help you advance in Krishna Dharma. If you chant, so they were saying, you chant the mood of wanting to do service?
Yes.
Yeah, that's actually the prayer. It means, please engage me in your pure devotional service. So Prabhupada has given various instructions at different times, places, and they're all valid. You can use any of them. But actually they all, you asked about the correlation, and they do all correlate. Because if Krishna is actually, if you're actually feeling the presence of Krishna, would you serve him? If Krishna came to your to your room, would you serve him? Or would you say, oh Krishna, it's so nice you've come. Or would you serve him? So if you're actually feeling the presence of Krishna, You'll immediately be completely subservient. Whatever I can do for you, my Lord, you see. Just like if Prabhupada comes, everyone, what can we do to serve you, Srila Prabhupada? What do you need? What can I serve you? How can I serve you? You want the prasada, your laundry, your arrangements, you see. If you have actual love, if you feel the presence of Krishna or a great saintly person, then service is naturally. If you're in the right mood, then service is naturally going to be there.
actually feel the presence of Krishna, then one has to be in a mood of service. Otherwise, you can't feel presence. It's like, if one is not in the spiritual world, everyone is feeling Krishna's presence, experiencing his presence at every minute because they're in that mood of service. If the service mood is not there, you're not in the spiritual world. You find yourself here, in the material world. So, feeling the presence and the service mood are non-different. You cannot feel the presence. There are people who saw Krishna with their eyes and they couldn't see him in the Stravashi of Prabhupada. Mostly they didn't understand. Like Shishupala the classic. No service mood. They could see Krishna, but they could not see him as the Supreme Personality of God, and they could only see him as an ordinary man. Because the service mood was not there. So, there's no difference, actually, between these different ways of saying the same thing. That's the correlation. Any other question?
Making the same question.
Mm-hmm.
So while chanting, should we say, please engage
me
in your service, please engage me in your service?
While chanting,
Shabbat? Shabbat. While chanting, Japa, Shabbat? Should we sing, please engage me in your service, please engage me in your service?
That is a standard instruction that Prabhupada gave us. What is the meaning of the mantra? So one is thinking like that, please Krishna, please engage me in service, please Mother Varamani, please engage me in service. Hare Krishna, it's wonderful, it's beautiful, it's perfect job. Or fixing your mind in the sound vibration of the name, or feeling Krishna's presence. They all are crying like a child to the mother, please save me, my Mother Varamani. These slaves are drowning in this ocean. They're all perfect. Whatever, actually, so what should I do? Whatever works best for you, according to time, place, and circumstance. Whatever helps you best to absorb your mind in Krishna's name, that at that moment, that's what you should do.
In that regard, then someone said, I feel like that. Okay, I'm looking at the picture of Radha and Krishna and I'm feeling very good about meditating. Seeing the photograph of painting of Radha Krishna and I'm meditating, Hare Krishna, I feel good about it. So we should do that too.
What's the question?
Should we do that too?
Actually, it's interesting. Well, I remember when I was a young brahmachari, young bhakta actually, in Los Angeles. For the first time I was there with Prabhupada in Los Angeles, it was so exciting. And then the word went around that some devotee was staring at a picture, chanting a shop and Prabhupada chastised. I mean, it's not wrong to look at a picture, but I can imagine he must have been like, you know,
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna.
You know, some fanatical way. He was like staring at the picture. He was more absorbed in the colors of the painting than he was in the name. Something like that. I think that must have been one. Certainly it's very wonderful to engage the eye, all of our senses. The eye, you can chant japa here, you see Prabhupada, beautiful painting. It's nice to see them. But those should be the other senses. Can be, you know, smelling incense off to the Lord. These other senses, which we may utilize in japa, they should be subordinated to chanting each syllable and hearing each syllable distinctly. That's the focus. I can imagine the devotee's mind is not even focused on the name; he was just focusing on staring at the picture. That's probably why Prabhupada chastised. So the other things can be there, but they should be subordinate to this absorption in the sound vibration.
Relationship with relatives, association with relatives.
Speak more how to relate to devotees?
Yes.
Yeah, I gave a whole seminar that in Sydney last year. It was very, very well attended, and the place was packed. And this is something, devotee relationship is something, an issue, a very solid issue for each and every one of us. Because good devotee relationships will make us very strong in Krishna consciousness, and bad relationships will hurt us very much in the progress in Krishna consciousness. In our society, in this kind, we have so many devotees that we have the potential for so many relationships. So the principle is always one of love, of compassion. You should always feel sympathetic. I remember one time Shama Sundar got very sick and nobody wanted to help him get better. Maybe they were afraid of getting sick also. And Prabhupada heard about it, he was very, very displeased. He said, if I had known, I would have personally taken care of you. The predominant mood in dealing with devotees, the attitude we should always have, is one of compassion. Always being compassionate for devotees. Always trying to help all the devotees to be happy in Krishna consciousness. Whatever I can do to help all the devotees be happy in Krishna consciousness. That's it. Always one of compassion. That was they used to say that about Vishnu, Prabhupada's sister. She was always serving Vaishnava. She liked to cook. She would say, what will you eat? What will you eat? She always wanted to cook for the devotees. She's just, her great joy and happiness was to serve the devotees. Vishnu, Prabhupada's sister. So, we see that in that atmosphere where the devotees love to serve devotees, it's like a spiritual world. The devotees don't want to serve it because an impersonal atmosphere. You wonder, is this this kind? I mean, I travel all over the world and see different places. In some places, the service mood is absolutely unbelievable. I mean, it's so sweet. There's so much service mood. I remember I would be in Pune, and my wife and I were there, giving some lectures there. So, they gave us a couple of boys to take care of us, and take care of whatever we needed, like the shop and my mom, and you know, a couple of boys that did the service. And they were doing great, I mean, they were just very wonderful to the service. But then it was at 3 o'clock in the morning, and there was no water. We were taking a shower. And the servants hadn't come yet. The boys hadn't come to see what we needed. And there I was stuck. How am I going to take a bath? There's no water. So I just took the bucket and I went outside the room. And in this community, there's such a service mood that one brahmachari is up chanting his rounds. He noticed I was in difficulty. Immediately dropped everything, took the bucket, he ran and got me the hot water immediately. He wasn't assigned to take care of me by the authority. But in that temple, every devotee, doesn't matter if they're assigned duty or not, the service mood was so strong and every devotee immediately, oh, you need some water, immediately brought me the hot water, you see. So that really, really is the proper mood, you see. Not that I have to be assigned to do some service. Oh, a devotee needs help immediately. Well, the temple president of my temple commander didn't ask me to do this, so I don't have to do anything. No, not wait for some instruction. Well, you have, here's somebody in difficulty, you have to take care of them. No. Somebody in need immediately serves. That is the thing. That is the thing. It's such an amazing mood when devotees have that attitude. It creates such a beautiful, it's just like the locust in the oven. It's really amazing.
If you look at the Sanskrit, you see, at the names like Jashoda, Jasho is fame, and Da means gives. You see, it's Kirti Da, Jashoda. Da is one who gives. You see? So that is the word of Raj. The Brijavati spirit is give. Not take. Material is take. Brijavati mood is give. So you want to live in Goloka Vrindavan every minute? Always be in the mood of giving. You want to stay in the cycle of birth and death? Be in the mood of taking. So there is some point in the Vaishnava. Always be a giver, and he will be the supreme getter of Krishna prema. If you always be in the mood of giving, you will get Krishna. That's what you will get. You will get Krishna. Anything else? Yes.
How does chanting stop? Chanting the holy name stop the cycle of birth and death?
How does the chanting of Hare Krishna Mahamantra stop the cycle of birth and death?
How can, oh, what a wonderful question. How can chanting Hare Krishna put a stop to the cycle of birth and death? Actually, it won't stop the cycle of birth and death in general, but it can stop it for you. The cycle of birth and death will continue to go on perpetually. But doesn't have to, I don't have to be on, if I will chant Hare Krishna with love, strictly following the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, then my circle of death will be, cycle of birth and death will be finished. So how does that work? How can I finish up my cycle of birth and death by chanting Hare Krishna? And here's how it works. We are in the cycle of birth and death due to misidentification of this material body, which is actually due to lording it over the Lord. Not wanting to serve the Lord, but wanting to be one up on the Lord. That attitude relegates us to remain in the cycle of birth and death. So, this chanting of Hare Krishna liberates one from this desire to be one up on Krishna and gives one the taste of how sweet it is to serve Krishna. That's how the magic happens. Because Krishna, being in the mood of a loving relationship with Krishna is the sweetest ecstasy. We only have pseudo-ecstasy and pseudo-bliss in this material world. There is actually no bliss in it. It's all superficial, artificial rubbish, actually. There's no bliss. This is a place near Ananda, no happiness. But this chanting of Hare Krishna, it actually brings us back into a loving relationship with that Supreme Person. And once we actually get a taste to that loving relationship, Vishayavani Varatante Nirahara Siddhina Rashavisham Yashofyasya Param Vishnami Varatate. Once we get that loving, the taste for that loving relationship with Krishna, and who needs all this garbage anymore? Just like Jamunacharya Albandra, he stated, Yadavadi Mamacheta Krishna Padava Vinde Nava Nava Rasadam Yataram Tumasa Jadavadi Vartanari Sangame Smaryamani Bhavati Mukhashushu Nishtivanamcha. So ever since I've been engaged in the chantal loving service of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, deriving what? Nava, nava, rasa. Newer and newer tastes at every minute in that transcendental service. If the thought of sex pleasure enters my brain, my lips curl with this taste and I spit at the thought. So, that is the beauty of Hare Krishna chanting. Hare Krishna chanting is enchanting. And the more you chant it, the more you become enchanted with Krishna. And the more you become enchanted with Krishna, the less you become enchanted with Maya. And finally you reach to the point where there's no more enchantment with the material nature, and your only love is Krishna. Only love is Krishna. There's no love anywhere else. And then birth and death is finished.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
When you finish that mantra, do it again.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So should I stop at 16 rounds? Papa wrote a letter to two Japanese boys. We're appreciating our movement. He said that he advised them that 24 hours a day continually chant Hare Krishna. He said when you're walking down the street, when you're riding the bus, when you're taking your bath, when you're going to take rest, always chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare,
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Because the fact is, the more you chant Krishna, the more you become enchanted by Krishna. When I first read that letter, I was thinking, this sounds like a pretty good idea. I usually I just think, well, my rounds are done, and I can have a whole day free to space out. So I was thinking, this sounds like a really good idea. Just chant more. Just keep chanting as much as possible all day long. But the mind is going, wait a minute, Sankarshan Das, let's not get carried away here. Let's not be a fanatic. I mean, come on. Don't take away my space out time. My mind is complaining. So I said, wait a minute, mind. You know, actually, this is really the topmost bliss to be Krishna conscious. So I started doing it. Just started adding extra chanting in my day. You know, when you go to take your bath, why not chant? Why not bathe your mind while you're bathing your body at the same time? Why not add more mantras to the day? The more we add this mantra to the day, the more of the day will go to a higher, higher, higher level of Krishna consciousness. The more you chant, higher your consciousness becomes. So who wants to be low when you can be high? The more you chant, the more you get high. The more you chant, the less you come down. And finally you reach a point where you chant sufficiently, there will be no more ever coming down to the three modes of material nature. You remain in a constant association of Krishna for all of eternity, engaged in a transcendental loving relationship with Him, and that is the goal. We want to achieve that state. Pure Krishna Bhakti. The more you chant, the faster you'll get there. So why not throw some extra mantras in here and there, at least a few? Why not? A few extra mantras in the day. When I'm stringing a garland, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Or hear some lecture, you know, some kirtan, that's also good. The idea is put as much Krishna consciousness into the day, every minute as you possibly can. Squeeze as much Krishna consciousness into every minute as you possibly can. Don't let the mind space out, you see. But the mind loves the space out. That's the mind nature, the space cadet. So we have to train up that rest of mind. Why did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur say in the morning you should beat your mind with shoes 100 times and in the evening again beat it with shoes, but this time with a broom? Why did he say that? Because the mind is rascal. Big rascal. So we have to chant Hare Krishna more and more and more and more and more. We don't say chant 16 rounds. Initiation chant at least 16. So even if you don't have time for more japa, you can chant on your lips while you're doing service, while you're walking down the street. Why not? What's the harm if we chant more? Because the more you chant, the more you can say bye bye to birth and death. Actually, I looked up the meaning of this word goodbye. In the Old English, you know what goodbye was? Anyone know? In the Old English, what was goodbye? It was God be with you.
you can see how our culture has come down. It used to be when you left someone's company, you would say, "May God be with you," and you would depart. But now they say, "Goodbye," or "Bye-bye." But formerly it was, "May God be with you." See? Even in England, not, this isn't India, this is England, British culture. Formerly, "May God be with you." So we can see how much the culture has been coming down, after generation, coming down, down, down. And now Prabhupada has come to pick it up and take it up again. It's like Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill. Prabhupada has come to lift the material world. You see, by his books, Krishna used his left pinky, and Prabhupada is lifting up this entire material world of his books. So let's flood the world with Prabhupada's books and save everything from the cycle of wickedness. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Nityananda Srila Prabhupada ki jai.